On the program today, we have two guests with us. Milton Allen is conductor of the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony, which is giving a concert tonight at 7:30 called The Art of the Wind Band at Dvorak Concert Hall on the EIU campus in Charleston. And composer Jim Bonney, who one of whose works is represented on that program. He's also going to be playing electric guitar in that piece. He is audio director of 2K Boston, also known as Irrational Games, as in video games, for which he writes a lot of music. He finished Mortal Kombat Armageddon as audio lead, created music and sound design for John Woo's Stranglehold. And if you are a gamer, I suppose you probably recognize some of these things. He's done some collaboration with other well-known folks in the classical world, including the Empire Brass. He's been a studio musician for numerous film scores, was a ghostwriter for the television program Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and scored numerous short films, documentaries, commercials, games, videos, and more. And as you might guess from that kind of a background, he's got a really interesting compositional catalog, which we'll talk about, and you can check out at jimbonney.com. Jim Bonney and Milt Allen will be with us very shortly on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Music by Georges Bizet, the famous tenor and baritone duet from the opera The Pearl Fishers, English translation, Deep Inside the Sacred Temple. In this case, the solo roles were taken by two euphonium players, David Thornton and John French, members of the Black Dyke Brass Band of England, conducted by Nicholas Childs. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. My guests for the show, this portion of the show, are Dr. Milton Allen, who is conductor of the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony in Charleston. And he's brought with him one of the guests on the program, who is appearing both as composer and soloist, Jim Bonney, for a piece he calls Diabolus Ex Machina, which is for electric guitar and band, wind symphony. And I'm very curious. I would like to hear what that sounds like, although I think we're going to be stuck with a description for the purposes of today's conversation. In any event, gentlemen, thanks very much for coming up to the studio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
And you're here because your concert is tonight at Dvorak Concert Hall in Charleston. Starts at 7:30, and you're calling it The Art of the Wind Band. And that's a title, Milt, you've been using for a couple of concerts, if I remember.
Yeah, it's a concert that we're titling that concert annually, our February concert, The Art of the Wind Band. And the idea behind that is really looking at the performance possibilities that the wind band is capable of. A lot of folks kind of have a preconceived notion of what a band can sound like, and also how they perform, the type of program that they present. And what we kind of seek to do is to maybe bust down some of those walls and stereotypical expectations and show and play some different kinds of things.
It seems to me that the band has been doing a better job of busting down those walls, as you say, than the orchestra maybe in the last, quite a number of years, if not decades.
Yeah.
Because, as we may have talked before, there seems to be more new music written for band that gets played.
Yes.
And there's plenty of new music written for orchestra, but it doesn't seem to get played with any regularity or as great a regularity as for band.
Yeah. I mean, you open up a very interesting subject, and one that's near and dear to my heart. It's, you know, orchestrally, an older audience, an older tome of music, an established repertoire that goes back a few centuries, whereas the band is a little bit different because the true core of the concert band repertoire is around the turn of the 20th century, the early 1900s, the whole suites, Vaughan Williams, and right up through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, as you get into Hindemith and Piersachetti and Granger and a variety of other artists. But But one of the things that had hindered the concert band movement, and of course this is irregardless of the great Sousa bands and the Gilmore bands, but one of the things that hindered the wind band movement was the fact that the level of playing at times was relegated to school groups and universities. And whereas in years past, an artistic standard may have been difficult to consistently come by, those things are by the wayside now. And composers have taken notice. And the band genre actively seeks out living composers to write for this medium. And what composers have discovered, in fact, I was at a national convention a few years ago, and Richard Daniels Poor was on the panel, and Michael Dougherty, and of course, well-known composers, John Corigliano, as a matter of fact. And one of the issues that came up was, well, what about getting more composers to write for a band? And is there a problem with the quality of performance? And these composers were tremendous. They said, you know, actually, we love writing for a band. It's certainly more difficult because timbrally, there's a lot more to choose from. I mean, there's a lot more colors, depth of colors, which can make it difficult. But what they mentioned that they love about the band is the fact that a lot of original band music is done in consortiums. So, for example, take some great university ensembles. You can get 10, 15, 20 groups buying into a consortium, which essentially guarantees that that composer is initially going to have 10, 15, or 20 premier performances, which is very attractive. And on top of that, most of those universities will try to bring those composers in. A wonderful case in point was Michael Dougherty. Bells for Stokowski was originally a part of a specific suite that he did, and the original was presented, performed by orchestra, and then kind of tabled. And I called his rental agency just to check to see how many times the orchestral version had gone out and how many times the wind transcription that he did had gone out. It was staggering. By far, the wind world was playing it. So there's it's a very hot medium. Composers are very open to it because they're guaranteed performances, because the artistic level of performance is no longer a question. It's kind of like a playground for composers.
So that example of the Dougherty piece sort of supported my original question graphically. Do you remember what the sort of ratio was of band to orchestra performances? You said it was staggering, but just
how
staggering?
It was interesting. At the time, and this was 3 years after he premiered the piece, or 2 years after he had premiered the piece, there had been two orchestral performances. There had been 48 to 50 performances of the wind transcription.
Wow.
In the same piece.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, I knew that. I was pretty sure I was onto something, but I didn't think I was that close to onto about that. And actually, I had a conversation with Rob Rumbelow, who's the new director of bands at the University of Illinois, on Monday, and we touched on some of this a little bit, because of course, as you say, that bands throughout the country are doing this, and I'm sure throughout the world. What is the difference, if there is one, between wind band, wind symphony, military band, symphonic band?
Sure, yeah. Which is one of the difficult things about the band world.
Wind ensemble.
Right. Well, it gets into the evolution of the bands. You know, the military band was very common up through, especially the beginning of the 20th century, and ideally recognized a military band from, say, a brass band, but also implied the use of winds. And more formal concert music was loosely one of the definitions of that. And then as you got in through symphonic bands, concert bands, those kinds of things, oftentimes it was about size and instrumentation. When Fred Fennell came up with the wind ensemble concept at Eastern, the idea was extracting a very...
You mean at Eastman?
Eastman, yeah, I'm sorry, Eastern, not at Eastern, but at Eastman, the idea was to extract essentially the wind section, augment it a bit, and form a one-on-a-part group, which could not only play chamber music, but also could play some larger pieces.
Extract the wind section from the orchestra.
From the orchestra, yeah. Right. And then just expand that a bit. Symphonic band, as an example, oftentimes refers to larger groups, say 70, 80 pieces or more. A concert band would oftentimes refer to 50 to, say, 60 or 70 pieces. We have what we call a wind symphony, because it's not a true one on a part. We have some sections that are doubled, and it's about a 45, 50 piece group. And, you know, the wind ensemble, you know, could be 35, 30 to, you know, 45.
I remember when I was at Northwestern, I played in, I honestly forget what I played in, either the Symphonic Band or the Wind Symphony, and then there was John Painter's Wind Ensemble, which was indeed a smaller, more elite group,
right,
just as you described.
Right.
It may have even been a little smaller than that, if I remember. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, anytime somebody sees, okay, the Symphonic Band from the University of Illinois or wherever is going to play, and now the Wind Symphony, sometimes it's just a difference in names because you have to call them something.
It's become blended so much. I mean, some groups call themselves a wind ensemble, but they're large. And I think that the trick lies in the conductor and the programming, because, a true one-on-a-part group is going to have a very different sound than the masking kind of sound that happens with a larger ensemble. So the selection of repertoire actually comes into play with those groups. But, any more, a lot of the names are interchangeable. You know, at Eastern, we have our wind symphony, our concert band, and our symphonic band.
And do you conduct all those, or you share those with other
folks? Our concert band's conducted by Barry Hauser, and then we have a platoon approach with our symphonic band right now.
Meaning?
I'll conduct some of that. We get our graduate students certainly involved. Barry's involved. So we kind of platoon those duties. And that's kind of our version in a different way of the Eastern Symphony Orchestra. We invite community members to be a part of that and townspeople. We encourage our students to be on secondary instruments in that group.
Oh, great.
And the neat thing, too, besides providing that experience, it also allows us to even look at another set of repertoire for our future music educators that they might not get in, say, wind symphony or concert band.
Well, since we are talking about repertoire, we are going to be talking, since you brought him here, Jim Bonney, who's written a very interesting piece for himself to solo in on an interesting instrument, which doesn't usually show up as soloist with a group of this sort. But you brought along some samples of, I think, of your group, but also of some other groups playing some of the things on this program. What do you think you might like to start with? Let's hear a little something.
Well, I think a terrific piece to start with might just be the Mother Earth Fanfare, David Mislanka, you know, one of our preeminent wind band composers, marvelous composer, and his particular ode to the trials and tribulations of Mother Earth, and it happens to be the piece that we're going to be starting our concert with tonight.
Convenient enough. And who are we hearing play this? Is this your group or somebody else's?
This is a group that is from Japan, and I could not tell you who the ensemble was because my Japanese is a little rusty.
Okay, then. Well, a Japanese group that we are not able to name just because we literally aren't able to. Heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9 playing Mother Earth, a Fanfare by David Mislanka. And enjoy. Music by David Mislanka from 2003 called Mother Earth, a Fanfare. The music will open the program by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Milton Allen, tonight at 7:30 at the Dowden Fine Arts Center on the Eastern Campus in Charleston, Illinois. Milton Allen is one of two guests with us today. He's also brought with him one of the other composers represented on this concert, whose name is Jim Bonney. And before we talked to Jim, just I want to let the listeners know that at least according to this program, everybody, all the composers on this concert were born since 1943.
Yes.
So this is an all living composer concert.
Almost. Russell Peck passed away this past year.
He did. That's right. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
You'll need to put that in your program notes.
Yes.
your verbal program notes. Yeah, but to the point, you've brought with you Jim Bonney. His piece is called Diabolus Ex Machina, which means?
Devil from the Machine.
Because what's the Deus ex machina is the thing in theater,
right?
And I assume there's a connection there.
Well, the Deus ex machina is something that is a plot point that is good, that makes everything work out well, and it's usually a weakness in the writing. Whereas the Diabolus ex machina is a terrible thing that makes everything go wrong, that's horribly explained and doesn't really fit the plot, and also a plot weakness.
Isn't that a bit risky to call your piece that?
Yeah, but I still think it's kind of appropriate.
It's for guitar, electric guitar, mm-hmm. and wind symphony, wind band. So how does that title relate to the music?
I set up some expectations, and then I interrupt them. And it's also kind of poking fun at myself. This is the first opportunity for me to write really high-level music for a high-level ensemble. And I feel like I need to bring some humility to this. So,
well, what do you mean by that, high-level music for a high-level ensemble?
Well, when you write for wind ensemble, you tend to think about the kind of ensemble that we'll be playing it. And so you think about how difficult you should make those parts. And I do a lot of work for high schools and for lower-level universities. And this piece is much more difficult. It's really only more the best ensembles are going to be able to pull it off.
And is this? Did you collaborate? Did you collaborate in one of these consortia that Milt was talking about earlier, in commissioning the piece?
There was a consortium, yep, based out of the University of Alabama, and Milt and his school was involved with that. I'm very grateful for his participation.
And I assume since you're actually sitting in our studio that you're doing a bit of a residency.
Yes, I'm here for a couple of days.
Yeah. So what kind of things are you doing while you're there?
Mostly involved with rehearsals and coming up with a kind of a high concept approach to the concert that I think will probably want to leave as a surprise for.
Well, we could tease a little bit.
Teasing is always fine.
It's I should mention too that one of the things about this piece that's really fascinating is, and one of the things that drew me to Jim's music originally was Jim isn't a band composer. Jim is a composer who happens to also write for band.
You know, I'm glad you said that. I'm going to elaborate on that in a little bit because his website makes fascinating explorations.
Yeah, and I find that very attractive. And those are the kind of composers that I really enjoy seeking out. And we first met in Chicago some years ago and just hit it off. I guess he felt really sorry for me, which is wonderful because we've had just a terrific relationship since then. But one of Jim's concepts is the idea that rather than guitar necessarily as a lead instrument, Jim also can perceive the guitar as just another instrument, another texture within the ensemble. And that's the way that this particular piece is essentially written. It's not, you know, the band backing the guitar. It's the guitar as an integral textural part of the ensemble as a whole, so which makes it a very different sounding piece.
When I see electric guitar with band, I could automatically go to certain kinds of music mentally, the first of which would be rock and roll of some kind or another, and it could be any other variants of rock, since that's probably the most common use of the electric guitar. But then it could also be jazz. It could be blues. What are you? What sort of stylistic background are you bringing to it as a guitarist?
Well, I'm definitely drawing from the skeletons in my own closet. I mean, I grew up, in junior high and high school as a total heavy metal head, and so I'm reaching back to that vocabulary in a lot of ways. But at the same time, I'm it's definitely not rock and roll or rock with an orchestra behind it. I mean, I'm really trying to create something that is timeless and unique as a different kind of voice for the ensemble.
And I mentioned your website, which is jimbonney.com. That's BONNEY.com. And there was one of the, is it Chaos Theory, which is also for guitar?
It is. And that is a soloist, a piece for the guitarist as soloist out front.
And that one did not strike me necessarily as, okay, here's a rock musician playing with the orchestra. It was... Even though it was soloist, it still seemed very integrated into the texture. Did you imagine them similarly with this piece, or very different?
Actually, this piece is kind of an evolution from that piece, in that I wanted to make the guitar part in this very much a part of the ensemble. I mean, to be quite honest, I don't understand why there aren't electric guitars in all wind ensembles. It just seems to make sense to me.
Well, that's a good question.
So I'm working on my part to expand the repertoire that way.
It's only a matter of time.
I think so.
Don't you think, Milt?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, you've got plenty of electric guitarists around who might well welcome the opportunity, provided they can also read the music.
Yes.
Which eliminates a lot of them.
Yeah, there's got to be
a lot of guitarists, ear players.
Some technical prowess in there, you know.
Okay. Well, you brought along Chaos Theory, part of Chaos Theory.
First movement, which is kind of in some ways, what most people would expect to hear. But it gives, I think, a really neat example of Jim's writing and the possibilities.
And the performers here?
UNLV Wind Orchestra, under the direction of Tom Leslie.
University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Yeah. And Jim, it's you playing guitar?
Yeah, right? That's me.
Yeah.
Is it usually you playing guitar when the piece is played? Not necessarily?
I guess probably more often than not it's somebody else.
Really?
But I really enjoy the opportunity to come and play it. That's for sure.
I'm sure you do. You get more money that way.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah. Okay, great. And Jim Bonney will in fact be the guitarist, as I think we said, in this performance of his Diabolus Ex Machina. But here he is with UNLV Wind Symphony in Chaos Theory on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was music from Chaos Theory by Jim Bonney, who was also the guitar soloist with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas Wind Symphony, conducted by...
Tom Leslie,
and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. In advance tonight of Jim Bonney's performance with the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony of his own work called Diabolus Ex Machina, that will be conducted by Milt Allen. And again, Jim, the soloist at the concert. That's at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston tonight, again, 7:30. And this almost all living composer program, I think I get that out. You also have a little multimedia going on, some choreography in it in one of the pieces.
Yeah, we have some multimedia going on through the whole thing. I mean, part of the idea of the Art of the Wind Band is really trying to make it accessible to anyone, musicians and non-musicians, to come in and really be pulled into the performance throughout. So we both have some visual, digital support, some images that we're showing to enhance musically what's happening, as well as into some performance art. Russell Peck's Cave is one of those pieces where actually the members of the ensemble create their own creativity. It's no conductor, so there's no way it can be screwed up. It's just the students, and they have to memorize the music, and the idea is to recreate essentially this cave that lies per Peck 3 miles below the Earth's surface in a cornfield in DeKalb, Illinois. And I've tried to be as much hands-off as possible to allow them to create this and let it go whatever direction that they'd like it to go. So it's a very different kind of piece. And in fact, the second half of the program is designed to be very different, very free. After that piece is when we segue into Jim's piece. And we got a pretty creative way that we're going to do that with some real chance music happening that we hope will... The audience will think it's just simply a set change, but I think they're going to realize, oh, my gosh, and we pull them into then Jim's piece. And then closing with a wonderful piece by John Mackey, Aurora Awakes. So very different kind of second half.
Do I remember that you did a piece that had some chance elements? Was it Libby Larson?
Yes, yeah.
About a year ago.
Introduction to the Moon.
I think that was our first conversation.
Yes, yeah.
This might be our third by now.
And Libby was there. Yeah, it was just... terrific.
And you said the kids loved her piece, and she really, I remember you said that she was ecstatic with the enthusiasm and quality with which they played.
She was just knocked out, and I had contacted her because I wanted to see
how serious she was about the liberties she had asked ensembles to take. And we did an enormous amount of original things for that. And the performance, she heard the rehearsal, wonderful things to say. And then the performance that night, Libby was the first one to shoot out of her chair in tears. And I mean, it was a wonderful moment. And she complimented us very kindly by saying she felt that that's probably the best realization she'll ever hear of that piece.
I remembered some comment like that, yeah. That's a real flattering for your group.
It was wonderful. I mean, yeah, it was terrific. I mean, just the chance to get to work with Libby was
sure.
Wonderful.
Well, now having said that, we have yet again another group, I presume, playing at Russell Peck's Cave.
Yeah, this is Gene Corporon and University of North Texas, Wind Symphony.
Okay, on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Music by Russell Peck, the late Russell Peck, passed away, it was just about a year ago, wasn't it,
I think,
within the last 2 years?
Yeah.
His work called Cave from 1976, which will be performed tonight by the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony, conducted by Milton Allen, with original choreography by members of the Wind Symphony, which somehow automatically sounds suspect, but you set it up nicely, so... I have a little better confidence than I might have just from reading the program.
Yeah.
Most band players aren't meant to be choreographers.
Well, yeah, and it's not a chorus line. We're recreating a cave.
Well, that sounds even better, actually. The chorus line, I think I'd just soon skip that. But, you know, chorus line, just thinking of the musical, gives a really awkward, but I'll pretend it's a decent segue, back to Jim Bonney's music. Because exploring your website, Jim, earlier, I was really struck by the variety of music that you've got on there. You actually have a number of categories. You have concert music, and quite a few excerpts that people can listen to. Chaos Theory, we heard a little bit of. I really enjoyed some of the movements from Reflections in a Tidal Pool, for example.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Really wonderfully descriptive music. I think there was a movement there, Raindrops or something like that.
Raindrops Hang from a Spider's Web.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really striking.
Thank you.
But then I went to, because it was, I had to, mm-hmm. under multimedia music, Wacky Tracks. And I would really like to have an occasion to play the Duck Hootenanny.
Uh-huh. That was an awesome, awesome piece to write. I do a lot of work for games, now mostly video games, but at that time it was actually a casino game. That's a digital slot machine that music went into. But we had the best time doing that recording. We got a chorus of kazoos together. We got an amazing guitar and banjo player to play on there, and a great percussionist that brought a lot of extra toys. And he would just totally got into the spirit of the thing. We had an awesome time at that recording session.
And you just had a clip on there. How long a piece is that?
The example is probably a minute or two.
Yeah, but I mean the piece is there. Is
oh,
there...
it's a loop.
It's so, a loop.
Yeah,
for...
it does have an ending, but it will loop nonstop until it ends. I mean, it's one of the things about writing for games is this nonlinearity.
Well, talk to me a little bit about writing for games, because I imagine there's a whole huge population out there where that's mostly where they hear their music, is the video games. And also there's been a number of orchestras and maybe bands that have been doing concerts of video game music.
Absolutely. I mean, it's now kind of recognized as its own genre, which I think is kind of strange because it's so derivative of film scores in a lot of ways, which are derivative of a lot of classical music.
In what sense?
Well, you see a lot more, I think, epic scores, especially in adventure games and first-person shooters and games like this. And, you know, you're seeing more and more live orchestras. It's actually becoming a great opportunity for composers as well to be writing for video games because the budgets are there, the audience is there. And it's a unique challenge to write music that is nonlinear, that functions with a different purpose.
Well, and you had all kinds of classical, again, this term is really loosely applied here, classical composers who have written film scores, mm-hmm. where they're, you know, given direction, essentially. You know, you have to do this in this spot and describe this act and so on. And some of the composers, I'm thinking Copland, if I remember, for example, really bristled at some of that, where they didn't want things to be changed, and Stravinsky, and mm-hmm. and they didn't work out too well as film composers as a result, because you have to have flexibility. But there's classical music, which has fed film music, as I think you said, which in turn has fed the video game music. But then the whole thing just begs the question, what's classical music?
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, and now we're talking... I mean, if I was to define it, it would be a color and a texture, and I think an approach that's to a more timeless style, something that's not going to sound dated, you know, and it's a really poor way to describe it.
Well, I hope it won't sound dated anyway.
What's that?
You hope it won't sound dated so people play your music for a long time.
That's true. Well, and I think there's still, you listen to, you know, Dvorak, and, you know, there's still relevance there, you know. You listen to Stravinsky, there's definitely relevance there. You go a little farther back, maybe it's a little more difficult, but the music has evolved, and that's why that's the case.
I don't know why I thought of this, but I was thinking of the theme from Jaws by John Williams.
John Williams, yeah.
I mean, that's just as good now as it was then, or Bernard Herrmann from Psycho, even though it's only like 30 seconds of music.
Right. Well, you know, but I think it brings up a good point. I think structurally is one of the big differences now, too. You know, like Jim's talking about nonlinear music, but also the traditional structures are kind of breaking down in music, but I would also argue, I think one of the big changing points, and I think one of the things that moves music forward is timbrely. The timbres have changed, and I think one of the big things that attracts us to music is timbre. If you ask, for example, Jaws, it's that minor second, but it's also the timbre. You know, those basses coming in. I mean, really draws us. And oftentimes when we hear, for example, newer music. It's the timbre of the sound. When you ask students, for example, at the university, I'll ask them what tunes they like. If I just play 1 second of this, how do you know what it is? How do you know what that thumbprint, that snapshot is? And it's funny because it usually gets back to timbre. They haven't heard the beat or anything else, but they're drawn to those new sounds. And I think that's one of the defining elements of music evolution, and also, in a sense, what defines classical. If you play strings for someone, they're going to say that's classical music. No matter how modern a piece it is, unless they see it in the context of, say, a movie or something. Sweeping generalization, but if somebody hears a saxophone, chances are they're going to say, oh, well, it must be a jazz piece. You know,
and not necessarily any of the above is true.
Right.
It may be. It may not.
May not. Right.
And therefore, is band music classical music?
Many would argue the preconceived notion of, well, no, it's band. It's not strings, so it can't be classical. Well, Mozart would argue with that, with his serenades, as an example.
Sure. And here you've got all these composers who write in, most of them write in both worlds, and in Jim's case, many worlds mm-hmm. of music. Yeah. You've got quote unquote jazz music on there, classic rock music that you've written, some really cool ethnic stuff, world music.
Thanks.
So, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, I'd love to chat with you guys for quite a bit more. Let me refer you again to Jim Bonney's website, jimbonney.com, and he's in town to perform one of his own pieces tonight with the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. It's called Diabolus Ex Machina. And Milton Allen is the conductor of the concert, and it's a wonderfully varied program of newer music. And why don't we go out with another sample? What should we go out with?
Perhaps one of the pieces that we're doing this evening is in recognition of Black History Month, the Movement for Rosa, Mark Camphouse.
Rosa Parks.
Mark Camphouse.
But reference to Rosa Parks.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rosa Parks, yes. Yeah. Rosa Parks and the Civil Rights Movement.
Sure.
Yeah, wonderful piece of music.
From 1992.
Yeah.
And this group is? Is it the same Japanese group? We can't.
No,
pronounce?
No. I'm trying to think. I think this is one of the military bands.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I can't place it. Boy, I'm gonna get beat up.
That's the thing about taking compilations of sorts. This is a compilation from Milt Allen of A Movement for Rosa, Mark Camphouse's music, and I thank both you gentlemen for coming on the show today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
It's a concert at 7:30 tonight down at the Fine Arts Center. Hope you can be there. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly.